Today on Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health, we are going to talk about the film Inside Out 2 with a very special guest, life coach Rhea Williams.
Yes, and she's so amazing. She's a really big deal. Shares so many nuggets and tips along the way as we discuss the film.
And before you listen, we want you to know, if you have not watched the movie Inside Out 2 and you don't want to know what happened in the film yet, please come back to this episode after you watch the show Inside Out 2. Okay, you've been warned. This is a spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Join us. We're two ladies just talking about mental health.
Go. Hi, I'm Joss.
And I'm Char.
And together, we're two ladies just talking about mental health.
We come from very different backgrounds, race, family, religion, but we share one major thing in common. We both have tendencies towards anxiety and depression.
And while we don't have any mental health degrees or credentials, we do consider ourselves experts in our own mental health journeys because we live it daily.
Together, we'll share some tips, stories, and interview mental health experts and guests with lived experiences.
Because we believe that sharing stories is key to destigmatizing mental health and feeling less alone.
Join us. We're two ladies just talking about mental health.
Go. Hi, listeners. I'm Joss from Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health with Joss and Char. If you're experiencing a mental health emergency or crisis, please remember these three numbers, 988. By calling or texting 988, you can speak with or chat with a mental health professional who can help you. Someone's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You don't have to suffer alone, and help is just 3 digits away. So write this down, 988. And if you don't have access to a phone, please go to your nearest emergency room for immediate care. Today on the podcast, we have a very special guest, life coach and my friend, Rhea Williams.
Yay!
Hi! Hey. Hi, Rhea!
Hi, Char! Hi, Joss!
Hi!
Thank you so much for joining us on Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. You guys are doing amazing. I'm so excited about this podcast. I really am. So thanks for welcoming.
Thank you. We are honored to have you. We are so excited. And I think it'll be a real treat for us and our listeners to talk with you about the movie Inside Out 2.
Yeah. Yes. And I just want everyone out there to know who Rhea is. She's really impressive. She wears many hats. She's done a plethora of things work-wise. And I've gotten to know her over these years. I've also learned that she's such a big deal. She's an overall wonderful human being, and she's a life coach. I'm going to read a bio on Rhea so that you know a little bit about her background and some of the things that she's accomplished and some of the things that she's currently working on. So Rhea Williams began her educational journey at Clark Atlanta University, an HBCU in Atlanta, majoring in psychology. Her love for working with and learning about people motivated her to continue her educational pursuits in the field of psychology by attending Cal State University Northridge, which is where I went for school. Thank you very much. Yes. She obtained her master's degree in marriage and family therapy. Wow. And she also holds certifications in mediation, co-parenting, and spiritual and premarital counseling. The heart and anchor of her work is centered with nourishing healthy relationships, inspiring hope, and promoting emotional healing. She's dedicated to fostering a safe, non-judgmental space with all who are in her presence while empowering folks to live their absolute best lives. Additionally, Rhea recently co-authored a workbook preparing couples journeying towards marriage or life partnerships.
It's entitled, I get it.
I know, right? It is entitled Souls Connected, and it's set to be published this year. Rhea's passion is working with folks who are ready to heal, grow, and transform their lives. And her coaching mantra is, I get it, I get you, and I'm going to help you get out of it. Rhea works as a life and relationship coach. She's a consultant. She's an entrepreneur and a producer. She's impassioned by creating transformative content that will shift the culture forward toward freedom, authenticity, and love. Her vast experience across industries has allowed her to grace many platforms, including being a recurring guest expert on the Jennifer Hutcheson Show. You might have seen her there, the Today Show, and also on the Today Show Australia. She even just recently garnered a development deal to produce a relationship show with a major television studio, and that show is set to begin production in 2025, so next year. Rhea's mission is really to help people understand what is real and possible in their lives while guiding them to deal with their challenges in an effective, peaceful, and practical way. Her unique journey is one that she desires to build a lasting legacy for her family, to empower and encourage other people to pave their own path. And you can find more about Rhea by visiting her website, Realism, which is spelled like her name, realism.com, and soulsconnected.org. Her IG handle is Real One. Like, she just really, her name is perfect. You were named perfect, Rhea. Like, Real One, spelled like her name, R-H-E-A-L-O-N-E. So Real One is her Instagram handle. And with no further ado, Char, can you please help me to give a very warm welcome to Rhea Williams as the guest expert on our podcast, Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health.
Yay!
What a bio. We got a short thing, huh? I've got a short
thing. I think it's fab. I mean,
no,
I think it's important.
It.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, listeners.
No, not at all. You have to own your accomplishments. You have
Thank you.
You don't have to be humble here.
I can't be any other way. Thank you, Char. Thank you.
Right, exactly.
I'm so excited to have you. You are a celebrity to me. I've watched your videos. I've seen you on the Jennifer Hutcheson Show, on the Today Show. I'm amazed that you wanted to come on our podcast. It is an honor.
Absolutely.
So, and we're going to talk about, you know, you're a relationship expert, a life coach, and we would love to discuss with you your reactions and reflections to the film Inside Out 2. So before we get into that, I just want to pay you a compliment because on your website, I just really appreciate your tagline, like under your logo, realism.com. It says real life, real love, real people, and real relationships. This is what we hope to have here with this podcast is real conversations about mental wellness and relationships and experiences. So just to give us and our listeners some context, could you like briefly share with us what is the role of a life coach?
Sure. I'm so glad. Thank you so much for the compliment. And I can briefly state that life coaching, one, is a newer industry. When I was a kid, I don't know that I remember hearing about it. No. But what we do is help individuals navigate through challenging life experiences. But then the other part of that is helping to create the space to move your life and or relationship in a forward direction. So I like to give context because life coaching and therapy are often used so interchangeably, but they really are different modalities. And I do have a background as a therapist, so I tend to blend in a way, but I'll explain the distinction. If you were looking at a timeline of your life with like the past, the present, and the future. Life coaches meet you in the present and go forward. A lot of therapy can cover the scope of past, present, and future. So that's how they become blended, because we both can help navigate through challenges. But life coaches, even though it's kind of difficult when you're meeting somebody where they are, it's impossible to not have to look back to see what got them there, but we don't focus there. We don't dwell there. We don't focus, you know, the effort of the goals are forward moving. So that's kind of the easiest maybe visual or way to digest. Life coaches are here forward. You know, therapy is kind of all of it together.
Right. Yeah. That's helpful. I like that. Yeah, that's
a helpful visual. And I think helpful for our listeners too, because we've talked about therapy.
Yeah.
That's what I've experienced and what Joss has experienced. But this is our first time interviewing a life coach. So I'm so glad it's you.
I'm so glad it is too. And I will add this context, because I learned my lesson on the Today Show. That was the last segment that I did in terms of like, well, I'll tell you, I mean, and this helps me too as an interviewer and interviewee. Life coaches do not diagnose, and therapy is specifically the area where you can deal with like actual like diagnoses and mental disorders and emotional disorders. Life coaching is very goal centered, and it's not, I mean, we have this term high functioning, low functioning. I try not to subscribe to that, because we're human beings, and any human experience can, you know, make us function better or less better. But generally, life coaches will not function in the same way. So when you deal with like anxiety, depression, I mean, these are the ones that get a lot of, you know, limelight, bipolar disorder, all of those things. You're not going to get that in life coaching, because that is a therapeutic DSM-5, Board of Behavioral Sciences, you know, psychological, you know, diagnosis. So that's not a component of life coaching and relationship.
Thank you so much for explaining that. And I'm just curious, how did you get into life coaching? Because I heard you got your master's in marriage and family therapy.
I did.
And what brought you to life coaching?
Well, you know, I have a very unique path, hence why I'm so passionate about folks paving their own. I started out the journey as a therapist in the state of California, which I love so much. They make sure that you get all the training under the sun. So I have the opportunity to have all, and I started way back in like 2001, to be totally transparent. But you get the opportunity to really learn the span of the world of therapy and have all different types, from children. I ran groups, couples, I mean, every type of therapeutic modality that's possible. And again, life coaching wasn't a thing back then. But I also worked in ministry, worked in the church, and just in life. And so I found that through the work that I was doing, what I was, I guess, best at dealt a lot with meeting people where they were. I was not 100% resonating with diagnosing people. You know, and this is just me. Again, I'm not speaking for all therapists. This is Rhea Michelle Williams. And so it took some really amazing supervisors. I've worked in pretty much every capacity, from domestic violence situations, sex abuse groups, private practice, government agencies, like I said, ministries. I've worked in institutions, college. So having the opportunity to really see and work in a lot of different therapeutic channels, I found it resonated most for me to have just a little bit more autonomy, because I don't, I don't know. I just, that was just me. So I made the decision in 2016 to just kind of create my own path. And of course, I'm so happy I didn't look back. And I also work very closely. My business partner, who I co-authored the workbook with, she is a licensed therapist, and we, you know, we trade clients all the time, but we do make the distinction because, again, coaching is different. So that was my path. Coaching resonated more for me.
Well, I appreciate that so much, because it sounds like as a life coach, you help your clients find their authentic paths. And that is your story as well.
Yes.
Found your own and paved your own authentic path. So I really appreciate that. And I was curious, you know, what was it like watching Inside Out 2 as a life coach?
Yeah, that's a good question.
You know, I am one of those, I coined this term spooky deep, and my brother and I joke about it. I am a spooky deep person who always gets that. really, I get very intuitive, insightful, spiritual messages from animated films. And so this is not the first one. And so what I loved about Inside Out 2 specifically, I loved one, by the way, go check out one.
Yes, too. I did love one. I did.
Yeah, it introduces the first five emotions, but this one masterfully, and especially as a new producer, I love the way they took such a complex situation, being the human condition and emotions, and they simplified it. So introducing things like anxiety, embarrassment, envy. Oh, I'm giving the movie away.
Tell people there's spoilers.
Yeah, we're gonna tell this like, spoiler alert.
Okay. I was like, wait, okay, so let's edit that out. Introducing the four new emotions,
which are talk about it
because we're going to tell them before the show airs.
Yeah,
and here's the thing: if listeners continue to listen, then you signed up for this spoiler alert. That's all. It's
You know, I can't stand when people ruin a good show or movie. So I'm putting myself. I can't stand when people.
Same. Okay.
Well, Shar, to answer your question, I thought it was masterfully done. I kind of make a joke about myself having a make it plain ministry. I just like to make things plain. And I feel like in the world of mental health, people can like over complex, like these terms and everything is just so high level. And at the end of the day, the main thing is the main thing. And I think the movie made the main thing that, and it is regardless of age, gender, there's no person that could watch that film and not get something from it. So that's what I loved.
Right. And so, you know what I noticed about the movie, like the new emotions that were introduced, like they were super engaging, obviously very relatable to everyone, like you mentioned.
Sure.
I specifically liked the fact that sadness and embarrassment, like they almost fell in love right when they met each other. And I felt like as a person that battled with depression for so long, embarrassment and sadness, that totally makes sense why they became so close to each other. Obviously all the other, you know, the other emotions that came in like anxiety. Yeah. That, you know, controls everything. But I was just wondering which emotions specifically stood out for you, or did you notice there was a certain interaction between certain emotions that was really poignant for you, or what was remarkable?
I could answer that just like that. And it's going to be anxiety and it's going to be joy. And why I love, I love the way that character, I mean, and you saw it, and this is the moment that I keep telling people when anxiety was, well, look, here I go again. There's a moment in the movie where you can see the buildup where anxiety was trying to run the show, the complete show, take everything over. Why that stood out for me is that we have, though I don't believe we can always control it, like it coming on, there is a way that we can regulate it. There is a way that we can say, okay, I'm not going to allow this to overshadow and overtake everything that my life consists of. And then joy, I think I just love so much. One, because she was kind of like the North Star guiding the team. And I think in my own personal life and even with my clients, that is my personal mission, is to embrace more joy, just because that's what life's about. Life is short. And I think I just love the way that was personified. Like she, and there was even a moment where, you know, Joy almost lost her steam.
Yeah.
She almost, you know, but Joy is a central force as human beings that can just keep, just push us a little bit further. So I like that. I like that she was kind of the nucleus of all the emotions, helping them to work together. I like that.
Charlotte, what about you? I don't even think, well, this is the thing. Charlotte and I have not discussed the outcome of the movie because we were trying to wait for all of our like authentic conversation to come out.
Yes.
So I have no idea what Charlotte's like favorite like situation was. Like, what was like most poignant for you?
I was really interested in this like sense of self being represented. You know, I was a dance and art teacher for 15 years and like K through 12. And as a teacher, I kind of observed like students have their own views about what they're good at, what they're not good at.
True.
I noticed in my experience, the younger kids are like, let's do this. Like, I'm like giving an art assignment and they're like, oh, this is amazing. This is the best thing I've ever done. It's going on the fridge. And then we get to around like fourth or fifth grade, and some students have already decided they're good at art. Some have decided they're bad at art. Mm-hmm. I thought this concept of, the sense of self really stood out to me, and how mm-hmm. as we enter adolescence, maybe it becomes more complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I'm curious, Rhea, as a life coach, and I'm going to be a new parent soon, so I'm thinking about it. How do I help my kid develop a strong, healthy sense of self? Oh, how do I continue to work on it for myself, like my beliefs about myself?
Oh, yes.
How I talk to myself. So as a life coach, how would you guide people on, working to develop that kind of healthy sense of self as a kid, as an adult? How do we do that?
Well, one, congratulations.
Thank you.
I love children so much. And it's just such a miracle and a blessing to bring a life into the world. So congratulations.
Thank you.
One thing that I could say too, that I love that the movie did, is if you remember, and for those of you who want to see it, our sense of self is largely based upon our experiences. So, all those little balls and that was just so amazing how they depicted that, because when you looked in all those little balls, it was all those moments of mistakes. Yeah. It was good moments, bad moments. And so I kind of have another mantra in my life that I just live by. It anchors me. And that's all things working together. Nothing is wasted. All things work together for the good. So I think for me, you and Joss, for your future beautiful baby, for our friends, our parents, even as human beings, if we can begin to embrace the lows and find the lesson in the lows, that is really kind of what has made me the most steadfast adult that I could think of. And I can't say that my parents taught me that. I love my parents so much, but they were thrusted into parenthood too young. They were just young. Mm-hmm. So a lot of, I think, why I posture myself the way I do is because life just raised me. There were just people, moments that really left impressions on who I am. And I would say embracing more. It's there's so much shame and so much embarrassment and so much, even with trauma, things that have happened to us, people, they don't, it's very hard, I will say, to find the light in those moments, but it's through getting that strengthens us and empowers us, so that when we come across somebody else, that's gone through that, that's where the magic happens. It's saying, guess what? That happened to me, or I've been there. And all we need sometimes as human beings, if we could just see one person that either gets it, has been through it, then it just naturally gives us a little bit. It may not present as hope, right? But it just gives you a little bit more okay, I'm not alone.
Yes, that is so true. For me, it's a sense of relief. I'm relieved that I'm not alone. And I thought the movie did that really well, because Joy was literally locking away the bad memories, right?
Yeah.
And then we have deep dark secrets locked away in a chamber of shame. Mm-hmm. And I thought that they really represented that so well, because when we're uncomfortable, we want to push it down, we want to lock it away, but it comes out.
It always finds
a way.
It does. And so Rhea, obviously the movie very much talks a great deal about that stage of adolescence, which I just found was the worst stage of my life. I mean, I say it was the worst stage of my life in one regard, but I also at the same time, a lot of who I am as an adult now, and a lot of the struggles that I have as an adult now, and that I had, even having to go through therapy, it really came from that stage, during adolescence, where that was the moment in which I learned how to manage or not manage relationships and that kind of thing. So as a relationship expert, How does your, you know, adolescence from your standpoint, how does it really affect the future of relationships? You know, when you're working with clients, you know, how do those things that are coming from adolescence, do those things come up? I know that life coaching, as you experience, as you define in the middle, the beginning, is like, no, we're looking from here going forward. Mm-hmm. But how often is it that a lot of the issues that the person is having present that's kind of keeping them from accomplishing what they want in the future? How oftentimes does that adolescence stage and what happens in adolescence really kind of affect that?
Oh, a lot. I mean, I'd say 90%. And that's just my first answer. I'd say a great percentage. And I know this is not a, you know, developmental psychology conversation necessarily, nor am I an expert in like mastering the different stages. But I will say that it is, again, if we think about that timeline, and I use this a lot with clients, when we journey through life from the point of being a carefree, you know, little baby that only cries when they're hungry, sleepy, you know, along through life, we get things deposited onto us. We have bumps along the way that shape us. We have those moments, again, those little balls. And so I don't know that I would hone in. I would even go maybe a little bit earlier than adolescence to where, and I, the reason why this is strong for me is because when I work with couples that are going through divorce or people that are struggling, they think that their small children cannot perceive what's happening, but you do. So even from the point to where a baby can't even speak, they're picking up the environment. So I think there's so many things that affect our adult relationships. And so I hope and wish and pray that more of us would just not negate those things, or that we would, you know, it's tough because it is hard to open up things that are like locked away, or, you know, especially when you have parents that are set in their ways or grandparents. It's difficult these days because some people are like, oh, well, we haven't talked about that before. It's like, why even open that can of worms? But the beauty is, as individuals, even if the people around us don't want to journey with us, that does not stop us from being able to say, you know what? That's part of like emotional intelligence. And I think self-exploration is not making anybody else responsible for your healing journey. So I think that it does affect our adult relationships, Josh. But the beautiful thing, I've got this term called trauma compatibility that I don't know if I'll trademark one day, but I think that life in situations, well, because the truth is, this is why I love humans so much, and I'm just a lover of the human experience. If you desire it, and you know, I keep saying 2024 is a healing year for those who desire it. So if you desire to work on something, you may not have the means to pay me or whoever to sit on somebody's couch. You may not be able to, you know, read a book or listen to a podcast and feel better. But I believe that life will start to align you with people who either can help work that out. You know what I mean? Like, you get opportunities to, and it may not feel good.
Thank you.
It may not be, it may not feel good, but it's going to be for your good because you'll be able to work out that stuff. It's going to come up. So that's a good thing. And that's where I can help as much as I can.
Right. It's so interesting. You are talking about, you know, sometimes we don't realize, you know, parents or, you know, people who are having children don't realize that their kids, you know, are noticing what they're doing, what was going on in their marriage. Like when I wrote my book and my father, you know, my father literally was like, I will not allow you to, cause I wanted my family obviously to know what was being spoken about in the book. Right. And not that it was going to keep me from publishing the book, but I wanted them to be aware before anything got in the hands of someone else, outside of them. And so my dad, I don't know if this was his reason for doing it, was like, oh, I, you know, are you afraid of me? Cause my dad's this big, you know, very, strong guy who can intimidate, you know, folks, but he came to my apartment and sat in, you know, the little sofa here while I read the stories, that he was in. And it was interesting cause it was like kind of turning, it was turning the tables on a parent. Cause my dad is a lot of the reason why I love reading. He used to read to us, like he put the voices and everything in baby, you know, in these little stories and stuff. And he, as I was reading some of the stories and especially the interactions between my parents, my dad goes, oh my God, you really knew what was going on in our marriage. And I'm thinking, not really. I'm just telling the story. Like, this is how my parents, this is what happened. This is how it affected me. Not realizing that the real interaction or the things that my parents were talking about and their own issues in their marriage were so obvious through those stories. I don't know if other people who, you know, would have read the stories are like, oh, this is what was going on in their marriage. But my dad initially was just like, oh my God, I didn't realize that you all understood these issues that were within my parents' own relationship. So, you know, obviously, Shar, I know you're having a baby and this kind of stuff, but I'll never forget that moment where my dad is literally sitting in, you know, in this space right here. And he goes, this is so weird. When you're telling me the story, you're reading me the story. Don't you remember when I used to read you stories? Mm-hmm. And now you're reading me a story and it's about me. And I see, like, he was just enjoying, you know, the stories being read. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of my parents' relationship and my relationship has changed since the book went out, you know, obviously, because, you know, it's one thing having these conversations with your family. It's different having those conversations and other people being privy to those conversations. Yeah. When, like you're saying, Rhea, you said everyone's not going on the journey with you. Mm-hmm. And, but what's most important is that the journey you're having is real. The journey you're having is honest, it's authentic. The relationships you have are authentic. And so even though, yeah, I think that me writing a book that was so real and so true was in some ways, you know, it could have in some ways, I guess you would consider it negatively impacting the relationships that I have with the people in my family. I am very comfortable in the fact that, you know, I've done this journey very authentically. I'm being very honest about it. And I do think this vulnerability has allowed other people to be very comfortable going, oh, Jocelyn, I want to talk to you about this. And I relate to this. And, you know, in the way of not being so judgmental, it really has made me become so much more human, yeah, you know, in the process. So, so I thought that was just really, really like amazing that you have mentioned that about parenting in general. I didn't know that that was even going to come up in our conversation today because we didn't really prepare for that. But you know,
it's one of the things I'm freaked out about with parenting, that every little thing matters.
It does. Like, nah. And it won't be perfect. And it won't be
that's
perfect.
That's when anxiety is like at the controls.
Yeah,
like,
see?
Read the book.
Yeah, yeah.
The things. It's like, I'm overbooking myself because I'm anxious because I'm trying to prepare, you know? And I mean, I think if we could talk about anxiety a little bit, like, yeah. I mean, also that same scene, Rhea, you mentioned where, like, to me, anxiety feels like spinning out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And that scene of this, like, tornado.
Yep. Yep. We saw it.
And glitching and not being able to unlatch from the, like, controls when Joy was like, okay, you need to let go now.
Yep.
And, you know, everyone's replaying the same clip of anxiety saying, like, I was just trying to protect her.
Yeah.
You know, it's a instinctual survival mode. Mm-hmm. Anxiety serves a function.
It does.
Sometimes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To help us prepare.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But we... I mean, I'm wondering, you know, how can we tell when that anxiety like crosses over into harmful? Like Riley's suddenly up at the crack of dawn, not eating breakfast, obsessively practicing hockey, breaking into the coach's office because she's trying to control the situation.
Correct.
I'm just wondering if you can like either speak to that character, or you said that there are strategies to kind of like take the wheel back.
Yeah.
If you could.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I don't feel so bad now because you gave all the good points. That was exactly
it. They can blame me.
No, but that was the part that I was talking about when it was like, it was just like the smoke was coming. I mean, she was just like almost out of her own self, like going
crazy. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you kind of answered it in that when it starts to impede on your you know, everyday functioning, or like you said, mm-hmm. I think what stuck out, and I guess I'll put it a different way, when it was starting to make Riley become different than who she was, like it was shaping her. So like, remember, I just remember there was a few moments. It was the one where she was sneaking in, and it was like innately she knew that that was not necessarily the course that she would have done. But that anxiety was like, so it's like making you kind of come out of character. And then the other one was when I think when she was playing the game and she was like off to the side and like her friends, it was just that aha moment of like, wait a minute, like who I really am would do this, you know, like I kind of been on an autopilot under this anxious way of being, but who I really am on the inside, it's like be more kind and more. So I think it's just, and there is no one perfect answer for this, because you're right. I think all of our emotions, which I think the movie also masterfully displayed, was they serve a purpose and they help us, but it's like nothing out of moderation or anything that like consumes. When it starts to consume, even to your point about, you know, mothering or being a new parent, it's like anything in our lives, which is good, because it's like, okay, preparation is a good thing, but you also have to have as a human being just a little bit of a release and surrender in terms of the outcome. So we can't control, like we can prepare and be the best that we can be, but how and like the way things turn out is where anxiety jumps over into control and starting to like spiral, because it's trying to control and dictate the outcome. We can't let it do that, because it's fear based and it's, we just can't. We do not know what the next minute holds. So that's, I don't know if that really answered it clearly.
Yes.
It definitely did. And I, you know, I did, I'm so glad you spoke to those moments of like, where she's like, wait a second, this isn't me. They're very subtle. And I think I like subconsciously recognize them, but for you to point them out, I'm like, oh yeah, they did that really well. Like she was like, what am I doing? And then she was like, and then she like kind of just went forward. And it reminded me, like, so again, this sense of self, she's having these moments of like, wait, who is this person? That I'm acting out of character. That's kind of like evidence that it's crossed over. And it's like, I heard you say on the Jennifer Hudson show that relationships start with oneself. And so I'm wondering, you know, how did you see that reflected in the movie? What can we do to strengthen our relationships with ourselves from a life coach perspective?
Oh, I love that. You guys ask such great questions. Well, one thing, yes, I did say that. And I kind of, I also made a statement on that show that talked about just how, I guess I'll start with yourself. You cannot create a safe place for someone else. You cannot love someone else. You cannot understand someone else if you do not do those things for yourself. Because it's almost like love languages or anything that we do outwardly, it's something that we've learned, or maybe we're just winging it. But I start with self, because we cannot hold anyone else accountable or blame anyone else for the things we don't offer ourselves, period. So if we desire healthy, thriving relationships, then we've got to just be able to, and I said something else on one of my appearances there about boundaries. And so people, that's like another popular thing these days. But if you don't honor the boundaries with yourself, then you won't know how to. So, you know, I keep, you know, and it, I try to make things plain. So what I mean by that, Shar and Joss, is like knowing what you like, or having an opinion, or if you feel like something is off, like honoring that. So these are little small examples, or like, you know, hey, I don't want to do that. Like if you just say, oh, I like this, I don't like this, just be paying attention to what those things are. If you don't, or if you get conditioned to letting your siblings or your parents or these bad experiences to shape, that's the part about the sense of self that I love about the movie, because in those good and bad and ugly or beautiful moments, it's like we can decide who we want to be, but how we were wired is what God gave us. You know, like we were all unique beings with unique personalities and wants and desires and dreams. And so it's our job to give honor to those things. No one else can do it. So that, I mean, I'm kind of going in a spooky deep way to explain it, but
just having
that holding space for yourself to just know who you are and what you like, what you don't like. And I think that only adds value to relationships. So maybe I can say in the way, if you don't do that, and then you find yourself having a lot of relational issues, then I would venture to, that would be my coaching, is to go back to, okay, well, let's start with you, you know? Mm. And if there's a question mark there, then that's where we need to put our focus.
Oh, lovely.
That makes so much sense. And I think what I've noticed about, your appearances and even just today, is like you have this way of distilling these more complex ideas. You distill them down in a way that is like both understandable and like short and sweet and memorable.
Thank you.
I think you are so gifted at that. So I'm so glad you are doing exactly what you are doing, because it really helps people. Like, and coincidentally, our next episode is going to be about boundaries.
Yeah, which is one of the most important things, right?
Yeah.
To discuss. Yeah. Okay, so I know we've been talking for a little bit. Let's give it a little bit of a break, and then we'll take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. And then we're going to get into a couple other things. Maybe we might get deep, but I kind of want to ask some hypothetical questions about the movie. So cool. I think that would be a lot of fun. Okay.
I would love that.
Listeners, stay tuned. We'll be right back with Rhea Williams talking about the movie Inside Out 2.
Welcome back, listeners. We're here with life coach and relationship expert, the amazing Rhea Williams, talking about the movie Inside Out 2.
Yay. I am so excited. You know, Rhea, this has been obviously a very engaging conversation, and I loved your perspective on the movie so far. Obviously, you know, we want to go back into relationships. Your work as a life coach deals with relationships. And so how did you view the relationships in the movie? Like Riley, I know she dealt with relationships more or less like, you know, her friendship relationship, the peer relationships, or her family relationships with her parents, even her relationship with power. I didn't notice that with the coach and with the ref and all this kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
How did you view the relationships in the movie is the first question. And then, you know, how do our relationships affect us? What's your answer to that?
Oh, I just love it. I could talk to you guys all day. I know we talked about that a minute ago. And thank you again for having me. I have to say, I always use this term, and I say it often, is that, you know, relationships are classrooms. And so, again, props to those producers and writers of Inside Out 2, because it did a great job of showcasing the complexities of the different relationships in our lives. And I'll tell you, when I started having the blessed opportunity to speak on larger platforms, you'll find people saying, oh, dating expert or love expert. And so when I went on the Jennifer Hudson Show, shout out to those producers, we collectively decided, I don't want to be boxed in, because not everybody desires marriage. Not everybody is on the journey to look to date. So it was and then the flip side of that, I believe that there's this kind of oversaturation and focus on love relationships and not enough on the other relationships in our life. So when I say life and relationship coach, I don't pigeonhole it to be love, relationship, romantic only, sexual only. It's like, we love as human beings. That's our job. So I try to expand it to that place. So I'm glad you asked this question. And the reason why, let me answer the question. Relationships in classrooms, because you do not get to the altar, which is the coveted the finish line for so many people is getting to this point of marriage. You don't get to that point and all of a sudden learn how to communicate or learn how to forgive or learn who you are and what you want. So again, I'm very passionate about this emotional intelligence. How self-aware are you? How
self-controlled are you? How perceptive are you to love someone and to spend a lifetime with someone? You've got to do so much to ensure, because I feel like we are just conditioned to say, oh, well, falling in love and being in love. But then someone has a parent or a friend or, you know, these disruptions, I'll say, where they weren't dealt with. Well, guess what? Yeah. That love relationship is going to feel some weight from those broken areas. Now, I'm very careful when I say that, because everyone's parents, child relationships are different. I don't judge or tell someone, well, you should be speaking to your parents. Well, we don't know the dynamics. But what I do know is when a relationship is broken in any, you fill in the blank in terms of who it is, sibling to sibling, you know, whatever, if there's some brokenness or something unresolved, it will spill over. It just will. It doesn't mean that that's the beautiful thing I can say now to promote love relationships. When you hold the space for someone's stuff, which is what we do whenever you're in close proximity, you know, grace and love, it does have the power to, like, you know, go the journey with a person. You know, it doesn't mean you have to show up and be perfectly healed, but that's part of the dance. So I think that relationships can teach us how to navigate these complexities, you know, on our journey. Well, that's, I don't know, again, I felt like a spooky deep answer, but I think that all relationships impact our lives. All of them.
They just And that's what I was in my intention for the question was really about the fact that, you know, oftentimes we say, you know, she's a relationship expert. And oftentimes we as a culture, I would say, and, you know, obviously, you know, our culture, it does inform a lot of how we by gender or, you know, you know, by our idea of what's masculine and feminine, we decide, oh, this is always about romantic love. I just believe that in so many different ways in which love shows up for us. Obviously, romantic love is not an area that I've been an expert in at all. But, you know, and, you know, I'm not going to say expert. I have not found romantic love in any of my relationships in the past. There hasn't been romantic love. But I will say the love that I have for my siblings, the love that I have for my friends, the loyalty and stuff that comes from that love, it does inform if I am to go out on a date with someone or, you know, try to get to someone on a romantic level. Oftentimes those relationships and the feelings that I've been able to, and intuition, I guess, that I've been able to build through those relationships have actually allowed me to say, this doesn't feel like someone I can go into a romantic loving relationship with. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't obviously fallen in love, you know, romantically with anyone in any of my past relationships. But I will say, I think it's very important that we as human beings always go, okay, when we think about relationships, for me, obviously, as a single person too, relationships to me mean, like, how am I with my coworkers? How am I with in relationship with what I do for work? The relationships I have with the students that I work with, the relationships that I have, you know, even with power at work, and the relationships that I have to, you know, kind of have my own way of living my life, and the relationship I have with myself, obviously, it all starts there, like you said at the beginning. So
it does. I feel a spooky deep answer coming, so I'm going to preface it before I say it.
Yay,
I love the spooky deep.
They're not spooky to
my brother Ely. Well, it's a joke, because from college we met when we were very young. And we just used to joke, like, oh, they're so spooky deep. We were not at the time, but now I've become that. So when you were just talking, it made me think about a few things. So one, and this is what I want us all to realize. And I was on my best friend's podcast a couple months ago, and I gave the example about unconditional love. And so I used children and I'll say pets, okay, as an example. You will see someone nurture, care for, and just be in love with their dogs or their cats or their, you know, fill in the blank animal or child. And you'll hear, oh my God, I've never known a love like this. And I've never. So my question or my point was that, so if a person comes to this earth, and I'm one, I don't have any birthed children, does that mean that I never have the opportunity to learn unconditional love? I would say God. He created us all equal, or if people are of the same sex. You know, we are very much in a heteronormative society, and I thank God for the people in my path that have caused me to challenge my language, because I believe as human beings, we all have an equal opportunity to learn and experience the spectrum of all of those things. So when you were talking and you were talking about, you know, never falling in love or kind of paying attention to your, that's kind of why I bring that up a lot, because the grace and just the tenderness that you see people give to their pets, or, you know, it's like, can we translate that to the human experience? I don't know. I would say, but some people do not. And, or like Joss, when you were saying, you know, falling in love, there is a reason. I've got this thing that I want to study more about, like our subconscious programming in terms of, you know, I had a couple the other day that I was working with, and we talked a little bit about how they were growing up. So if we go back to earlier on in the episode, we were talking about when children are perceiving their environment. And I could say I kind of fall in this category. If you perceive that a love relationship does not equal safety, then it will block you from being able to be open. So, and I can say that because friendship is my thing, right? So I've gone my whole life, you can be my friend, I'll give you all kind of grace. You can rob a bank, sleep with 10 people in a row, and come to me, and I'll be like, oh my God, we got to figure it out. Like, and I won't even judge.
Me too. This is so, oh, I love this.
You just, when you said that, because I coach from a place of honesty and authenticity. So now at my age, I'm noticing that my wiring and my conditioning, and even those people that I work with, I'm like, somewhere in our journey, maybe there was a subconscious message that said, what I won't do is be married to anyone, you know, because what I see marriage equals, I don't want that.
Thank you. That's me. That is so me. That is so me. But I also want to say, today is the 1 year anniversary of the love of my life, Denzel, passing away, my doggy. So I am drinking from the mug that says, I love Denzel, because I do. And you know, it's so interesting, Rhea, that you brought up the idea of how we love our pets, because I really felt like my dog, so many people don't. I mean, I say this, he was my soulmate. Like, he was my soulmate. I think sometimes we have soulmates that last forever. And then we have soulmates who last to do a specific job for us, you know? And I think, you know, obviously it's been a year. At 1:14 PM today, he would be dead for one full year. But he changed my life. There are relationships out there, and I'm crying because I loved my dog.
You loved Denzel.
I loved him. Everyone,
this is a good way to honor him.
Right. Yeah, it's a wonderful way to honor him, because he helped me manage my emotions. Like, I think about this movie In and Out 2, and how much my animal was really my emotional support animal without having any kind of degree. He didn't have any kind of, and some people would say, like, he was kind of, he was, I always said that Denzel was my alter ego.
That's how I feel about my dog, Maya.
He was my alter ego. He did not take anyone's crap. Like, there were people that he'd be like, I'm not putting up with this. And he just wouldn't put up with it. And
he had
like,
boundaries.
Girlfriend, I didn't have no boundaries. And Denzel did. And I did.
Denzel had boundaries.
So it's like he informed me, like, it was literally like, he'd be like, we don't like this.
Yeah. We're not doing them.
And you know what? As I had the dog for a very long time, I started being better about saying, just be like Denzel, like do what Denzel would have done, you know?
Yeah.
So again, I mean, when you said that about it, I mean, I really feel that message needed to come to me specifically about Denzel today, because we literally are recording on a day that is really important to me, because it's a year of, I mean, 1 year of, you know, having to manage the grief. I grieved for a very long time, and I still grieve, you know, the death of my dog. But I also realize that sometimes we have these soulmates, and the soulmates, even though they're not physically here anymore, I think the messaging that came from the relationship I have with my dog, it does inform how I manage other people and how I manage myself. And it does keep bringing me back to that sense of self, you know, all the time.
Relationships are classrooms, and Denzel taught you a lot.
Denzel was like the best. He was the best professor.
It doesn't have to be a romantic relationship.
Yes.
You have to be a human, you know. My dog, when I was depressed, just laid on my bed all day, just stayed with me, you know, and in the end, that's all I needed, really, because nothing anybody was going to say was going to, like, make me feel better.
Yep.
I just needed the company.
And it's a unique relationship. It's
totally, yeah, I'm so totally glad we're honoring Denzel today, because I had the pleasure of meeting him, and he was
he was a very special dog. So many people have cried about his death. I didn't even want to tell people in my apartment complex that Denzel was dead. Like, I kept it a secret. I didn't say anything. And then one day, my neighbor, who I didn't even know, she had a special relationship through the door with Denzel of my place, because she, you know, she's a single woman. She lives by herself. She's, you know, a medical doctor who works very, you know, long hours, and certain days she's off. And being in the complex by herself, there would be times when Denzel was like, kind of like, he would let her know by his bark. She knew the difference between the bark that was like, somebody's up in here, and the difference between when she would come home and he'd be like, hi, so happy to hear that you're here. I'm glad you're home. Like, they had a relationship that was so interesting. So when I told her, I'm like, mind you, this lady, like, her job is to deal with dead people. So she's a medical examiner doctor, and so all of her patients are dead. So I just assumed that when I said, oh, Denzel is dead, that she'd be like, oh, that's fine. Oh my God, she lost it. She was so sad, so devastated. Like, I cannot believe this. This hurts my feelings so bad. Like, you know, it was interesting. And then more recently, my neighbor who lives upstairs, he has a dog too. And my dog taught his dog, when she was a puppy, how to walk upstairs. Whereas my brother's dog taught my dog how to walk upstairs. You know, you give what you give, you know, like, dogs, right? Animals, right? And so Denzel was like, she doesn't know how to go upstairs. Let me show her. I didn't know that she didn't know how to go upstairs, because I guess he would have to carry her up the stairs. So, you know, he kind of had a, you know, a slight relationship with the dog upstairs. Right. Well, for a long time, I was like, I'm avoiding them. I don't want to see the dog. I don't want, you know, like, after Denzel was dead, because I was like, I didn't want to cry in front of them. I didn't want to, like, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. One day he goes, yeah, I heard Denzel barking the other day, man. It really helped me, because there was some person out there trying to steal packages. And I was like, I'm sorry, Denzel is no longer with us. Like, and he was like, what? I was like, Denzel is dead. No, Denzel's still around here, because I heard his bark, and that's what made me look outside.
Whoa.
It was, when I say it was like crazy, and it was so encouraging at the same time, because I was like, yeah, I mean, I knew, like, I know that Denzel was brought into my life, and people who don't know me know that I got Denzel because I was critically depressed. This is the same time when I was writing the book. After some of the stories in the book, I was critically depressed, and I ended up getting the dog after I got laid off from that job, because I was just so depressed. I would be in bed until 10 o'clock in the morning, and the first thing I would do is drink a glass of wine. Like, that's what I was doing every morning. And then I got Denzel, and then he was like, no, get out of the bed and take me on a walk and then get out in the sun. And that, it changed my life, because I had to get out. I had to interact with people, all the things that help you come out of a really deep depression. He was the reason why I came out of the depression. So the person that you guys see today, It is Denzel. Literally the creation of Denzel. Yeah.
Yay.
And so many really great people too. But anyway.
No, that's so, the key yeah. relationship.
And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad we got to honor Denzel today. Right. And we're actually going to wrap up, but Rhea, usually we do, we like to offer some like tips or mental health strategies that have worked for us. We usually offer them to listeners at the beginning of the episode. But first of all, you've been giving us tips all episode long, which we so appreciate. It's like chock full of tips. But we thought, let's do one more tip as a grand finale.
Okay.
So take it away, Joss. What kind of tip do you want?
Okay, this is the tip that I want. Obviously, we're talking about the film. So, Rhea, using the emotions and the circumstances that we're in, the In and Out 2.
Inside Out.
Sorry, not In and Out. Inside Out.
The same
two.
Thing.
That would be a burger. That would be a burger for the baby. Charlotte's baby loves burgers. Anyway, so okay, using the emotions and circumstances in and Out 2.
Inside Out.
What are the signs that we should look out for when we start new relationships that show us that this relationship may need some help? And then I'm going to ask you a follow-up to, like, when, I guess I might as well ask you now, you could do both at the same time.
Sure.
And then how do we know when a new person in our life obviously has learned very healthy habits and they're a great person for our life? So how do we know when we need help in this relationship and maybe this relationship needs to go away? And how do we know when a relationship that comes in is like, yeah, this is a keeper?
You know, I would just say I make things plain, is paying attention to yourself around them. So I think that you just know, you feel it, you sense it. Mm-hmm. So how a person, and I'm answering generally because it really can apply, both of those questions are kind of, my answer would be the same. So how a person communicates with you, how you feel or in their presence, is there any fruit that comes from the relationship in terms of like bettering your life, or is it creating more static in your life, or like are you feeling more off center? But again, it keeps going back to being in tune with you. So sometimes people just coast and kind of let anybody into their space. And a lot of times you don't know something's not good for you until something brushes up against. But that, remember, in our last kind of conversation, it doesn't mean that the brushing up against is a bad thing. So it's just more about self-awareness. I don't think there's a particular time frame. I think what screams louder is when toxicity enters the building. I mean, it's easier to kind of grab, but I think it does sometimes take a little more time before making a hardcore decision on, like, is this person good or bad for my life? So I think, again, it just goes in tune with honoring yourself. And one thing I will say is, like, if someone were to say, oh, well, in terms of emotional healing or that self-awareness, it's just not stuffing down what you feel. So not ignoring your emotions, dealing with them. So when they come up, and again, I'm talking about us as individuals. So it's less about, ooh, has this person done their work? Oh, you'll know if they have, because you'll be able to tell just one interaction, like whether it's defensiveness or whether it's like, even if it was positive things, being overly complimentary or super, like, you know, I was just having a conversation yesterday with a guy, a friend of mine, and he said on the first date or whatever, maybe he was a little too, whatever it was for her, he was just too touchy-feely, too much emotion, too quick. So it's like every person is different, but you just kind of know when something is like, you know, so it's just kind of an ebb and a flow, to be honest. I would not answer one static way that you know for sure, but I think constantly checking in with yourself is how you know. It's just,
that's so practical too. Cause like, it's like reflecting after hanging out with someone. For me, the question is, do I feel drained or do I feel energized? So, you know, with this podcast, it's a lot of work, but afterwards I feel energized. After we record, after we talk about it, after I'm creative.
Yeah.
And I mean, your response ties so beautifully into the movie of acknowledging the full spectrum of feelings, not shoving things away. Yep. We are whole human beings. And you mentioned toxicity. I was like, oh, that's a great character for another movie. Like toxicity comes in, or
I just talk sometimes.
Or like peace. What is
that?
feel like, or
yeah.
So I think that could be really, really fun too. But yeah, again, knowing yourself, noticing those
cues,
how you feel around people or things or jobs,
yeah,
all the relationships, yeah.
Yep.
Rhea, thank you so much for sharing your time, your expertise. I was furiously writing in my notebook because you just offered so many nuggets that are so applicable right away. And like you said, people don't need to pay, you know, thousands of dollars to figure out, oh, I like this, I don't like this, I feel this way, I don't, you know, or I feel this way after this experience. Like, it's very approachable. Mm-hmm. And we're definitely, when we post this, we'll share your socials with our audience. But and Jocelyn mentioned them in the beginning, but would you just repeat like how our audience can find you?
I will. And I wouldn't be me if I didn't just add this final tip, because you know, who I am and what I do is so important to me. It is my life calling, and they are the same, who I am and what I do, thank God. I will say, just to that final point about if I feel this way, you know, and if I don't feel this way, I think if you feel a certain way or if you react a certain way and you want to know more as to why, call us.
Yes.
Sometimes, I mean, because if you do, it doesn't mean, but if there's something in you that desires something different, I'll put it that way, because again, we're shaped and wired a certain way, but then as life goes on, you might start feeling like, this isn't serving me anymore. I'd like to explore a new way. That's where therapists and life coaches can come in. So,
Realism.com.
So it's www, that's the old days, but realism.com. And my workbook with my business partner is Souls Connected. So it's souls with an S, soulsconnected.org, to find more information there. Join our community so that you'll know when our book will be published.
Can't wait.
It is a three-parter, by the way. So volume one is for couples that are venturing toward marriage and life partnership. The second one are for singles who are desiring kind of journey toward a life commitment. And then the third one is for long-term couples that are like double digits and just needing to revitalize their connection. So we're trying to capture the spectrum of the human relationship experience with our three trilogies. So yes. And then my Instagram is Real One, R-H-E-A-L-O-N-E.
Yay.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time. This has been so great. Thank you, Shar and
Jones.
Blessings to your podcast. It's kind of
fun. You know what, Rhea? Like I say, I know that you're going so far in life. Just don't forget about the little
people. Oh, are you kidding me? We are. Well, let me, okay, I have to say one more thing. You know, I like to talk. I'm going to just say, I am a spiritual woman, so I'm going to say this because I'm free. So spirit, God, the new evolution of healing is coming through the form of those of us light workers, if you will, that have any type of communication platform. So I say that we, Shar, Joss, Rhea, whether it's a book, a podcast, a movie, a speaking engagement, whatever way that we can communicate or get a message to people, it's not sitting on that couch like 20, 30 years ago when I got trained. So I just want to say, like, we all have that shared blessing. Mm-hmm. It's a responsibility, but it's also a beautiful vehicle to set people free and heal. So I'm happy that we get to share in that. That's the
I receive thing. It. I receive it fully.
So, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great day. Bye, listeners. Keep watching, keep listening.
Yes, please. Thank you so much, Rhea.
You're welcome.
Take care.
All righty. See you soon.
What an amazing honor and treat to have Rhea with us today. Like, my cup is full. My heart is full. I feel ready to take on the day.
I know, right? There was so many good tips and just, you know, good vibes overall, like all around. That was just a really nice conversation.
Yes, and join us next episode where we talk about boundaries, burnout, and how we recuperate.
Yes. So thank you, listeners, for being here with us on this journey to build a really, really strong mental health community that is trying to destigmatize all things that are mental health related.
And yeah, check out Rhea's socials and resources. Ask for help when you can. And bye for now.
Bye. Go. Hi, listeners. This is Joss from Two Ladies Just Talking About Mental Health. I want to remind you that if you are experiencing a mental health crisis, please call or text 988 or go to the nearest emergency room for immediate care. And maybe you're not in crisis, but you need a therapist to help you on a more frequent basis, but you're concerned about the cost. Here's a tip. When you're reaching out for therapists, be sure to ask them if they offer their services on a sliding scale, meaning that they can lower their rate to better accommodate your financial situation. And if you're looking for a therapist who specializes in working with minority identities, there are collectives and organizations out there that have you covered too. Here's a couple of those resources. For Black women or girls, therapyforblackgirls.com. If you're looking for a therapist of color, you can go to nopsych.com. That's nopsych.com. For South Asian therapists, there's southasiantherapist.org. And for LGBTQ plus identities, the National Queer and Trans Therapists of Color Network, which is NQTTCN.com. If you are parenting as an LGBTQ plus person, rainbowfamilies.org. Again, when you contact a therapist, please ask, do they offer their services on a sliding scale? That will help reduce your financial burden. Blessings to you and your search. May you find a therapist that meets your needs.